somebody coming in for some.
Are we up over there? I'll call the Tax Conference Committee to order for May 6th today. It's good to see you all. Had a nice little break yesterday. Not much going on. 13 days to go. We do have a list of things that we think we should probably continue to work on today that we've put at the members' desks. Oh.
It's ready.
Is it the same as this one? 84? Yes. Okay. And we also have a couple of technical amendments that we think we should or would be wise to get them included so they don't get missed. So should we just start with the technical amendments? There's a Senator.
So, Mr. Chairman, for the members, we have the technical amendment for the local development article, the TIF article. There were some misdescriptions of things, and that's all this does. Doesn't change anything substantively.
And, Madam Chair, I think Mr.
Silva and both have gone over it. Both sides have gone over
Mr.
it.
Yeah, Mr. Michaels have reviewed this. Mr. Silva, is there anything that we should add?
Sir, Mr. Silva, is there anything we should add to that?
No, Mr. Chair and members. This is just a technical amendment making some technical changes to the local development article, and I did work with Mr. Michael throughout the day yesterday, and it's the ESS 84.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Here's a description.
Any discussion, members? Seeing none, Senator Rest renews her motion. The ESS 84 be adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The ESS 84 is adopted.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the A92, has that been passed out? And Madam Chair and members, the A92 is a technical amendment that we need to bring balance back to the IRRB provision. We evidently ended up getting rid of a fund transfer that balanced this on a floor amendment. And so we need to put this back in to bring balance back to the spreadsheet. And it has to do with IRRB transferring $60,000 for a FD study.
Thank you.
You know, unless we don't want to do the study, then we probably wouldn't have to do the transfer. Ms. McQuay, would we still have to do the transfer?
Mr. Chair and members, no, there's no transfer needed if you don't do the study.
Yeah, either. Well, is it? Well, this would bring it to zero if we do the study, and if we don't do the study, we wouldn't need this. Maybe we should hold on this and see if we're going to do that study.
Mr. Chair.
Didn't even think about that, huh?
Yeah, maybe if we can, I'd like to check with the Rangers.
Yeah.
But as I recall, and I could be wrong, I'm just looking at Mr. Hines, I thought when we studied fiscal disparities in the Metro, we made the FD fund pay for it.
And, Madam Chair?
That's just paying for it.
Right. So that would be consistent.
Yes.
Either way, whether we're doing
We insisted on that. We insisted on that, too. We weren't going to do general fund money because in the Metro area, the fiscal disparities, as you just said, fund paid for it. So their fiscal disparities funds pays for it, which means the IRRB.
So, I mean, the way I hear this is if we're not adopting the base study, we could still adopt this now. And decide later if we want to adopt study, or is it all in here in one amendment?
But, Madam Chair, this would transfer $60,000 from IRRB to management and budget, and if we don't need this,
Mr. Chair,
Ms. McQuay,
this amendment would replace the section that also has another transfer that is not needed. So, if you adopt the amendment, you have not yet adopted the section.
Oh,
so
is that right?
Okay.
We have to adopt the section.
I think we sounds like we should adopt the amendment, but then leave the provision for later discussion.
So I move it.
Yeah.
Senator S. moves the A92. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. A92 is adopted. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. McQuay. Sorry for that confusion. And then we have got the A81 is an amendment that we need to do to get the CPA AIS so that the language is the same as the spreadsheet. Is that right, Ms. McQuay? What my note says. Madam Chair, I've just been informed that this is also something that we should sit wait on for a little bit. So, on to the list. Well, Madam Chair, I think there's some uncertainty as to the schedule of payments for AIS, and it's no sense making changes to the schedule until it's sure as to what it's going to be. Oh, and Madam Chair, I'd like to draw attention. We have a guest, Lieutenant Governor Pretner Solon.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Tax Conference Committee. Sure, good, nice to see you.
Checking on your work.
I thought you might be here to lobby us for, is there a provision? Are you working on that?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
We are so thrilled the Lieutenant Governor is here, and we hope you will open your heart to the Duluth food and beverage and lodging tax. Really, we see those are on the agenda later today, and we know the House had got it right in the first place, and we want you to. We trimmed the original proposal and made it even better so that the taxpayers will pay less over time and they will both expire quicker. And I know Lieutenant Governor Pretner Solon understands how important this is to Duluth.
Former Senator Lieutenant Governor Pretner Solon. Welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Madam and Mr. Chair. I really appreciate this. And I'm only here briefly, but I want you to know that Duluth would put this to good use. And I'm sure that you've heard about the mayor's visioning process for the western waterfront area and how much of an impact that would have. And we paid off our bonds very early, and we've been good stewards of the money you allowed us to collect on food and beverage and the inns and the hotels. And I know that renewing that and allowing them to use that would be very helpful in the planning for that western part of town that really needs a fresh look.
Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Lieutenant Governor. We'll take a good hard look at that today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's very nice.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
She's right about everything she said. So when you're ready to move those provisions, interested.
Senators usually are.
Hey, Mr. Chair,
Representative Davis,
I would like to make this bipartisan and echo the chair's comments.
Thank you.
You're for what?
The Duluth Food and Beverage and Lodging.
Food and Beverage and Lodging for Duluth.
Thank you.
We're working on three votes.
Are you wearing something today, Senator?
No, I forgot to wear it. Oh, no.
Senator Rest has
a Duluth medallion.
Yes, she wears on special days for Duluth.
And I'm promoting my favorite city in the state of Minnesota. Speaking of
Mr. Chair, I'm not.
There you go.
Senator Gazoff,
I'm not sure that Senator Rest then has been to the Brainerd Lakes area.
We have a question, Senator Rest, as to whether we should reconsider the TOD.
Give me a little bit more time.
Senator Rust is working to see if the finance folks can cover some of the cost with the TOD. So we'll see how that goes, and then maybe.
And if
Senator Rust.
You know, if we can't do it, then we in this bill, you know, we've been working it on for 3 years, and all, you know, at the last minute to run into such a roadblock from DHS, it, you know, we can forgive sales tax for, well, here it comes, you better believe it, for dogs and cats, but a widow to be able to get title to her dead husband's car, what do they think she's going to do? You know, run off to Mexico, sell the car, and run off to Mexico with some gigolo? I mean, come on. So in my mind, those two provisions are linked.
Well, Madam Chair, as, you know how we like to see legislators that care about their provisions. So we'll wait on that one also, I think. Okay. Snowmobile clubs? Any chance of that today? The money item, I guess, maybe not. Sliding scale limitation, that's a non-money item. Could move
Mr.
on
Chair?
That. Madam Chair.
Can I just ask on the snowmobile? That's not our position, but it, Representative Davids likes it. Yeah. Does that cost money? And is it's in the non-general fund, and how much?
I think it's a couple hundred thousand, but maybe one of the fiscal folks. Ms. McQuay or Ms.
Mr. Chair and members, it's an all general, it's not all general fund. It's a general fund cost primarily, $280,000 in the first biennium and $570,000 in the second biennium. And because it's a sales tax exemption, there's a legacy cost to it as well, $20,000 in the first biennium and $40,000 in the second.
So it's a half million for the biennium. So it's a half million for a biennium, but of course it starts late, so that's why it's the lower cost for the first, for this biennium.
Representative Davids.
Just to, thank you, Mr. Chairman, just to remind members what that is, that's basically saying that if a snowmobile club's buying grooming equipment, that they wouldn't have to pay a sales tax, whereas if regular for-profit, from what I understand, a for-profit, they can buy those and pay no sales tax, so it's just kind of an issue of fairness. And so hopefully we can fit that in.
Yeah.
And Senator Rest, what was the usage of that equipment again?
It was for airport runways.
It's a private joke.
That was good.
What do you think, Madam Chair?
Well, excuse
Representative
me. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I think you should look at who the other House authors are on that provision.
All 35 of them?
No, all. Rangers.
Rangers.
Pretty cool.
We're joined by Representative Vavney, the range representative.
Good morning, everyone. Yes.
The northern representative.
My timing is impeccable,
you're
Mr. Chair.
Right on. Was it spot or stop? No.
Right on the spot.
Yes.
I think.
Oh, we are.
We adopt.
Waited a little more, but I thought it was honestly. That's
Madam Chair, these are equipment that are used by snowmobile clubs for grooming trails. Currently, ski hills get the same equipment, and they are exempt when they're used on ski hills, but not for the snowmobile clubs. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on that. So, in addition to snowmobiles and ski hills, and my city has a ski hill and a ski jump and mm-hmm. all that good stuff. We also groom our cross-country Nordic paths, and we have that equipment as well.
And that would...
And is that exempt?
Not currently, but under if we make this change, I'm going to bet it is. Because that would be exactly what they would be doing.
Can I ask Ms. Dalton about that? I mean, Three Rivers Park District, which was an oversight on our part, quite frankly, on the local government issue separately, is a large park district in southern and western Hennepin County. Lots of cities paying increased property taxes to maintain this big joint park area. And they do a lot of capital expenditures on the property tax, and they have a lot of these machines that are grooming the Nordic ski trails. So can I ask Ms. Dalton?
Ms. Dalton, can
tell me what she knows about that.
Ms. Dalton, can you enlighten us about cross-country trails as well as snowmobile trails and sales tax exemption on the equipment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do have an exemption for ski areas, and to the extent that there are cross-country ski trails with the ski areas, their inputs would be exempt. But there isn't one specifically for just ski trails in parks or things like that. If you do the local governments, you're probably going to get the ski trails in parks.
And Ms. Dalton, I'm sorry to see you on crutches, but did you win the game?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you win? On the crutches?
I left before I found out. We were ahead, though.
Sorry to see you on the crutches. Madam Chair.
So since we don't know where sales tax is going yet, I think if that's all right, I'd like to hold on this. And I do want to talk more about the ski, the cross-country Nordic, which, you know, for people who don't do this, it seems like it doesn't mean much. But it's just like some people snowmobile, and literally tens of thousands of people do the Nordic trails, and they're not all tied to where there's a ski jump or ski slopes. So, for example, in fact, I walked there this morning, Highland Nature Preserve in were saying earlier in Bloomington, we have a incredibly well-developed, well-used cross-country ski, really some of the best in the nation, and it's not attached to the ski slope per se. So I would certainly want that to qualify. And I know throughout Hennepin County, and I know Minneapolis has trails as well, it's a big recreational and growing activity for Minnesotans.
And trying to get attention.
Sure, and Madam Chair, I know that like Lake Bemidji State Park has a quite extensive cross-country ski trail network, so it's worth looking into. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ms. Pollack actually pulled up the statute, and it does apply to ski trails as well as ski areas. So they're already getting their machinery and equipment exempt.
Thank you. Should I go back to the sliding scale limitation again, or should we wait on that one? That's a non-cost item. Okay. Cigarettes, that's pretty small. You want to give little cigars the same tax as cigarettes? You know, when the advocates were here last year, that's what they kept saying over and over and over to me. We just want this to be the same as cigarettes. And lo and behold, it didn't turn out that way.
Mr. Chair, the advocates for which side?
For those that wanted to tax little cigars. And they just wanted them to be taxed the same as cigarettes. I heard it 100 times. And you know what happened? They got taxed at twice the rate of cigarettes. And I'm fixing that. I just think that if that's what you ask for, that's what you should get. Do you want to hold on this one, too?
Yeah, let's hold on this.
We can pass the next three here.
Can we do the next three? Oh, geez. You know, the lieutenant governor was pretty persuasive, though, wasn't she?
She was. Yeah.
I think, you know, I think I got an opportunity to visit with her a little bit later on. I just follow up a little bit with what she said, if that's okay.
Mr.
Puppies
Chair?
And kitties, you know, are we going to finally make some progress? Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, just so you know, we want Duluth, but I hope this afternoon you can get to the Duluth, and the House will take the Senate language on the Proctor at the same time as well, if we can.
Sure.
I'll get there. I think, they view themselves as one region. It makes sense.
And, Madam Chair, just so everybody's kind of clear, the Senate had just food and beverage taxes for Duluth. You have a little accelerated payback mechanism using some of the lodging tax. Being that we didn't have that, has anybody come to you with concerns about using the lodging tax that I know, while it's not always used this way, traditionally is used for tourism, you know, and that, and this is, you know, a divergence from that. Has any advocacy groups or anybody, any department or anybody brought a concern of that, even though I know we've done it for some cities?
Well, Mr. Chair,
and
if Ms. Dalton can respond on this too, you know, what Duluth first asked for, we told them no. I mean, you told them a louder no than we did on lodging, but we instead changed the lodging to make it dedicated not for additional tourism, which they already have the lodging tax for, but for the capital costs of what they're trying to get done, as Lieutenant Governor was talking about, and the way the numbers worked for us, and Representative Dabney can get into more of this, is that it makes both of the taxes turn off quicker because you get the stuff purchased. But Ms. Dalton, as I recall when we were working through it, you know, as you mentioned, there are other folks that we have done this for already. And, you know, maybe Ms. Dalton can give us a little primer on kind of what the past has been for other communities.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think what might be most useful to know is that Duluth already has a fairly high lodging tax, but, you know, there's 3% that's already going to tourism. The extra 0.5% that they are asking for here, when they were using, they had increased taxes to fund the aquarium and the deck. They were using the food and beverage and the additional 0.5-cent lodging. So we're basically saying how you funded the deck and the aquarium is how you're going to fund these tourism projects in West Duluth.
Madam Chair.
If I may, can Ms. Dalton tell us other communities who've had these exemptions? I mean, mine has. My city council didn't choose to enact an increased lodging tax for the Mall of America, but it has the authority. And I know there are more. I believe the Twin Stadium has some issue there. And you know, I don't know if Ms. Dalton can think of others, but I know this is not groundbreaking and it's not for Duluth, but there are other communities who have the ability to do a lot more with their lodging tax than people realize.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct. The one I can think of off the top of my head is Giants Ridge, has a lodging tax, which is going to pay for some of their capital improvements. I'm sorry, I'm back on drugs. and so I'm having a little trouble remembering all of the rest of them off the top of my head.
Miss Dalton, we decided that today was the day to ask you as many hard questions. Miss Pollock, and how about Rochester? DMC. Miss Pollock.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I was writing in.
We're querying about lodging taxes that are outside the normal use for tourism, and we've talked about Duluth and Bloomington and Minneapolis, and we were curious about Rochester at the DMC. What did we do down there last year?
Mr. Chair, I would have to verify, but Rochester does have a lodging tax that is additional to their purpose for tourism, and I will check in on the specifics of that.
That's plenty. Thanks, Ms. Pollock. So we'll contemplate on that. You bet. Senator Riss, you got any thoughts on the next two items?
Definitely on hold.
On hold. Transit, that's tied in with I'm blanking on it. Ms. Pollock, where's the section that the transit is in that's got other provisions, so we've been holding on this?
Mr. Chair, that is...
Mortgage indebtedness and also one other, the military.
Correct. On page 19 of the side-by-side, House Article 4, Section 7, and Senate Article 3, Section 10,
and Ms.
Page 19 of the side-by-side.
Ms. Pollock, page 19. And, Madam Chair, we've kind of just been holding on that, not because we are so concerned about the conformity for the mortgage indebtedness, but because of the military provisions that the House has. We think there's a better than 50-50 chance that that might happen. We could just wait and do the two of them together. But we could draft an amendment to split this out if you thought it would be helpful. Madam Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, I'd like to think about this. You know, we have the indebtedness issue, and I think this year
we do, too.
Yes.
Are they close?
You know, the revenue estimate doubled for that thing.
Oh, that's what happened.
It was $7 million, and then after we got to conference, it was $14 million.
We got some new information.
Yes, it wasn't anything that the Department of Revenue did, Mr. Chair. But I think on that one, you know, this year has been a good year. Last year was a more difficult year to get, you know, to deal with because of budget concerns. But this has been a good year to teach other legislators who have never served on taxes, not us, what federal conformity is. I think everyone learned a little bit this year, and these are provisions that are like that. What's unique about them is it be unlike a legislature acting to catch up to Congress, it would be acting before Congress. And so for me, I'm okay with leaving them alone because trying to predict what Congress might do is difficult. And while I know the transit one costs a lot less, arguably going ahead and doing federal conformity for the indebtedness would have larger impacts for more Minnesotans. And while it's an expensive item, I think in my mind they're kind of the same thing, that my guess is Congress is going to do them, and then we're going to come back and conform. But trying to get ahead of Congress. And, you know, there might be an argument if surpluses continue that the legislature might want to do as you walk through on the transit item, might want to say, well, we don't care if Congress ever conforms. We're going to give them a state tax relief on these items. But I think particularly on the indebtedness one, you know, the big chunk of change, you know, it's a huge number, both federally and state. And you know, I'm just saying I'm thinking of them together as something is, you know, does the legislature want to get ahead of the feds on conformity when we've worked so hard to get non-tax committee colleagues in all four caucuses to even know what federal conformity is? Which I think that alone has been, people actually can describe it now, which is interesting. I've never seen that here, that if, unless you served on tax committee, no one ever knew what it was.
And, you know, the problem with the mortgage indebtedness is the cost came in twice as high as we'd expected. That's a problem. And, you know, and if I'm sure as the members sitting here know, that if we were under target, it wouldn't be a problem. But that's not the case. And so we have constraints, and we'll have to take a look at that. I would like you to think about the transit one a little differently in that the cost is negligible for that. So we might be able to move forward on that without impact on our spreadsheet. So why don't you take a look at that when we get a little closer to moving on the spreadsheet. So studies. Purpose statements, do you want to talk about purpose statements, or should we kind of leave that purpose behind? The Senate has a long-standing tradition of thinking that the language of the legislation should stand on its own and should explain its intent within the language of the bill. Am I quoting you pretty close, Senator Rest? I think I'm quoting Senator Rest pretty closely.
Mr. Chair, I would respectfully disagree in that where I don't like to see purpose statements is in finance items that aren't tax expenditures. I'm okay with those all dying a death that, you know, should happen. But the purpose statements as it relates to tax expenditures serve a different purpose. When the House over a number of years has been trying to get people to view tax expenditures for what they are, which is hidden spending that we all pay higher taxes for to have them, they get embedded into the tax code for all time, unlike finance, where finance chairs have to reauthorize appropriations year after year or they don't continue, or every 2 years. That's not the case with tax expenditures. They live on whether we need them or not, and it takes tons of political guts from everyone to get rid of them, even when you can see they don't work. So when the House had passed purpose statements a few cycles back, the idea was at least somebody's going to look at them in the big, thick tax expenditure book and go, now, why did they do that? And does that work? And so you're defining, why are these entities getting tax cuts that we all have to pay higher taxes for to pay for them? At least it would force future tax members and tax chairs to look at that. Because it really is only the tax committee that has these ongoing things that never get reviewed. I mean, we're leaving $11 billion of biennium on the table in tax expenditures. Now, under nobody's design would ever anyone say we should get rid of all those. You know, we're not going to get rid of the mortgage deduction. We're not going to get rid of employee-provided health care benefits, which I think is the most expensive one. But, you know, we would never have to raise a tax, and we could fund everything if we didn't have tax expenditures, and no one looks at them. $11 billion. And we just think the purpose statements force legislators, when they get that big book, think about what are we doing all this for? And if people like their tax expenditures, they should be able to justify them with a sentence or two to describe them.
I'll take that as a no. Senator Est.
Legislators, however, I don't actually disagree with you with the policy part of it, but legislators don't write them. They don't come with, when you introduce a bill about, somebody introduces a bill about puppies and kitties. There's no purpose statement that would be the tax expenditure at the beginning of that bill. I think that, you know, if it was placed there so that you could, you just like it is in the bills that we don't, that we always amend the purpose statements out, I think that's where you would get the attention of legislators. I don't know anybody that reads the purpose statements in the tax expenditure budget bill. I mean, I don't. You know, I will look up a tax expenditure and I want to know the number. You know, I want to know what the latest estimate of it is. And it's my understanding too that legislators, period, don't write the purpose statements, but the nonpartisan staff is directed. Ms. Pollack, is that correct? I mean,
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, generally, yes, that's correct. You know, the purpose statement requirement also requires an explanation of the standard against which the effectiveness of the tax expenditure is to be measured. And that is often not discussed as the bill moves through a committee or in conference committee, and that's sometimes not fully fleshed out in the process. So,
and Mr. Chairman, for Chapter 150, were there purpose statements included?
Mr. Chair and members, there were not.
So the requirement, Mr. Chairman, the requirement at least for Chapter 150 has to be met in this bill, as well as the tax, even if we repealed the purpose statements, they would have to be nevertheless included for this bill, as well as the catch-up for Chapter 150. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members, I think it would depend on the effective date of if the conference committee were to repeal the purpose statement requirement. So if it were
I see. And Mr. Chairman and Madam Chair, maybe we should look at the purpose statements that are already in this bill for Chapter 150 and see whether we actually do think they muster. And I was wondering if that's what you were looking for.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Chair, in the House, authors actually do write them, not always, but often. And in fact, we've got them all for every provision in our bill. And you can read them on page 88.
Do you have the ones for Chapter 152?
No. But we can go back and do that. But I want to make the point on if you want to read them, go to 81 of the bill. And I'll give you an example of the difference. So let's take the sole proprietors. Without the sole proprietors on page 81 of the House Bill, subdivision 4, without that language there, you instead have to go read, let's see, page... If people not found them, page 81 of the House Bill.
What's the article in this section?
Section 7, Article 7,
Section 11.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Madam Chair.
And I'm trying to find... So read the sole proprietor there. So you can see on that, you know, that's a good example of how it defines what that tax expenditure was for. So if people wanted to go back in time and read it, it says the provisions of Article 4, Section 9 are intended to provide equitable tax treatment for Minnesota businesses operated as sole proprietorships by allowing sole proprietors to claim the research credit on the same basis as it allowed for business operated as C-Corps or pass-throughs, which to me is that plain language that the governor's been talking about in on-session where someone can understand what that meant. And if without it, we should read the provision for sole proprietors in the House bill. And if someone can direct me to where that is, and I'd like to read that so you can see the difference.
And just one minute. Ms. Pollack, does that language fulfill the requirement for assessing the effectiveness or whatever the second part of the purpose statement requirement is? And if you would...
It's a judgment call on our part.
Okay.
But I would ask the question.
Center rest.
What is the... what standard of effectiveness that's called for is...
which is the... What effectiveness
standard
is being
measured?
Yeah,
what effectiveness standard is there in the... fundraising sales by nonprofit groups, which we also—I mean, we both have a provision on that.
Yeah.
It just summarizes what the provision is, rather than indicating what the standard of effectiveness, a standard or goal against which its effectiveness may be
measured.
Where's that in these? Would you say?
Madam Chair, are you tracking what the question is?
So I think so.
We're reading the research credit for sole proprietors purpose statement on 81. And where is the standard against which it's going to be measured, or how are we going to determine if it's being effective?
I want to answer that, but I still want to finish on what I was talking about first, because I think people are getting
confused now. Madam Chair.
So back to the sole proprietor. Because I can't find the language in the actual language, so I'm looking to Mr. Michael. I just read, everyone in the room, what a purpose statement for the sole proprietor would say. It was plain language that people who've never sat on tax committee could completely understand. We're going to let sole proprietors get that same benefit that these other people get. That was it. So without it, I'm going to ask Mr. Michael to read, also in the House tax bill, the language that defines that exact same thing. So if that's okay, can...
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't know if you actually really want me to read this,
yes.
But it's on page 55.
I want him to read it.
Mr. Michael.
Because largely it's a matter of striking language.
Yep.
So if you look on page 55, line 16 and following, it's modifying the existing definition of a credit to, say, a corp, you know, under... present law, it says a corporation and then partners in a partnership, etc. So we're deleting a restriction that says this is only allowed to partners in a partnership or shareholders in a corporation treated as an S corporation under section 290.9725R, and inserting instead individual trust or estate is allowed a credit against the tax computed under this chapter for the taxable year equal to the dollar amounts.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would ask you, do you think legislators are more likely to review a sole proprietorship change for the R&D credit that went into law with the language Mr. Michael just read, or if they also had to read a tax expenditure ahead of that in law?
Madam Chair, to be honest with you, I don't question the motives of legislators very often, but I am going to think that they probably will not change whether it's in there or not. And most legislators probably aren't going to read much of this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just strongly disagree with that. I think because for most legislators, what Mr. Michael just said is gobbledygook. No offense. But it's just, you know, strike this statute, blah, blah, blah. You know, when you sit in the finance committees, it's pretty easy to figure out who's spending money on what. And when you sit in the tax committee and you do it this way, it's very difficult. And it doesn't call out to legislators flipping through these bills. And, you know, I mean, I know not every legislator reads all the bills, but a whole bunch of us do. And it calls out to people to go, we're spending $83 million a year on a refundable R&D credit, which, you know, that's one of, you know, that we got rid of last year because that went to businesses that don't pay state taxes. But if that, you know, if we don't have that kind of language, there's a subset of tax committee legislators who will know this, who work closely on it all the time with staff, but it doesn't help, I think, legislators who are choosing between should we fund early childhood in the K-12 committee or should we do an R&D credit over here. You know, I think it helps people. And do I have an agenda in supporting these? Yes. I think bipartisanly and bicamerally we are quite cowardly when it comes to having the guts to repeal some tax expenditures because every tax expenditure in the books got a set of lobbyists and, you know, I mentioned one yesterday, long-term credit doesn't work. Shouldn't be spending $9 million a year on that. But if we had this is designed to make sure everyone buys long-term health care, we would all get that that's not what it does, that it's just not worked. And we would repeal it. And we would save the taxpayers money who are paying higher taxes to pay for these tax expenditures that we can't get rid of. So I do think every little push helps. We've watched Congress go through the same thing where we've watched bipartisan sets of Congress work really hard to try to get their colleagues to repeal some tax expenditures that, oh, by the way, disproportionately on net, the overall tax expenditures in Minnesota overwhelmingly disproportionately go to the wealthiest Minnesotans. And when we won't look at them, we force not everybody to pay more, but we make our tax system more regressive. And so I feel strongly about them because I think they help legislators review what they're doing when they do a tax expenditure that costs $100 million a year.
Thank you. Senator Rest.
You know, but I agree with you. And instead of but. If you look at the one on the research credit, we could disagree on whether they are intended to provide the operable word there is equitable. Now, equal is one thing. That's a description of it, but equitable indicates a social value of fairness, and I think that particular provisions, as it's written in the bill, and we had it too. You know, we had a discussion and a bill presented. It is an advantageous tax treatment for sole proprietors relative to other businesses. So. We could disagree on even the purpose statement. We could get into disagreeing on what should be the social value words, which usually come up in these, or some economic values, one of the two. Tax code, in my mind, doesn't have any others, economic value statements or social value statements. So I think you can get... Even with a noble purpose statement, motives for doing purpose statements, you can still get into the weeds about the words that are used to describe it. And you know, why don't we do that same thing? Extend that to all of our property tax items. You know what? And you have some? Well, I mean, you know, but they're not tax expenditures, but they are tax policy, and are they not? And we spend hundreds of millions of dollars on property tax relief, and there is no place in in our, I mean, we do it on the sales tax for local governments, their purpose statement there, but not on not on LGA, not on on CPA, not on not on even, we only ask local governments to come up with a purpose that is a but-for test on tax increment financing. We don't do it. We don't say that those projects are going to have, that there's any purpose to them. why just, I mean, it's not, it is truly a question, why just there if it's a valuable exercise for us?
Madam Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to look at all the finance items, you know, but I can tell you my experience serving in all the finance committees I've served on, and indeed what Representative Senator Rest is talking about now as it relates to LGA and ETR and things like that, those are the finance side of taxes, and I know people understand why taxes is powerful, because we're both a finance committee and a revenue committee, yeah. And we're the only ones. We're the only people who can raise and spend. Everyone else can only spend.
I wasn't ever going to tell anybody that.
But we could do that, but that's not really the purpose of purpose statements for tax expenditures. It's to get people to take a deeper look at those, and we could certainly do that, but that's the spending side. As to, you know, well, we could write the tax, the purpose statements differently. We would embrace that. We wish the Senate would have written purpose statements for their tax expenditures, and we could discuss all of them, and that's what a tax conference committee can do. You can have an author carrying a sole proprietor bill on both sides who write their purpose statement differently, and the conference committee can work it out. But really, taxpayers do not understand that we are giving up $11 billion a year in revenue in tax expenditures. And I just think it would highlight, because we can't get the courage to get rid of them. You know, we actually got rid of one, and it was something I worked on with Governor Pawlenty. It's the only one I know that we ever got rid of. We repealed the $50 refund on the, I'd have to walk through the you sale, the no, the sales tax on gasoline, and we bought the jobs bill. That's what we paid for. We repealed a tax expenditure, and we used the money to buy the 2010 jobs bill, and that had the angel in it, which I still don't like. It had an extension for TIF districts. It had all kinds of provisions for the Mall of America. I mean, the list was huge. We repealed that. We were losing $30 million a year on that, and we bought a jobs bill with. That's the kind of choices I want the legislature to make. But
like
instead,
repealing
we look at
the sales tax on the exemption of sales tax on clothing would be a major step
another
forward.
One. Absolutely. And so the point there would be, it would get legislators thinking about, you know, we don't have to just raise taxes. We can actually turn off some tax expenditures and fund other things and not have to raise taxes. But it always seems we've got two camps here. Let's buy stuff and let's not raise taxes. And there's a middle camp that says a lot of this hidden tax cuts that are benefiting or not the purposes we wanted, and for people we don't even contemplate that we really didn't intend to give them these benefits, we instead go off and raise taxes to buy the things we want, or we don't buy the things we want, yet we make people pay higher taxes to fund these things that are not the things that the legislature would even want. And so I think they're important. And I will say, I'm proud to be the author that has repealed the only one I know of, actually two now, the R&D credit. That was the part that was refundable, but to work with Governor Dayton to pay for a different set of priorities, and that allows everyone to do it without raising taxes. So I think it's important.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do recall the change with the Governor Pawlenty and the job. Well, I remember all that. I was on the conference committee also.
Okay.
Anything else on this? Does anybody else want to throw some
gas on the fire?
Yeah.
Staying out of this.
Wise man.
We've been talking about this for a couple of hours.
No.
Days.
Well, I'm kind of reaching the end of the list. Maybe it's. I think we did the TIF fix.
That was the
We did the TIF
fix. Yes.
So done. Anything else, Madam Chair?
Mr. Chair, can I ask you your thoughts on the minerals? I mean, how would you like to? I mean, should we try to get everybody moving here to get to a final resolution today or tomorrow, or how would you like to?
Madam Chair, if I had my druthers, I would adopt the amendment that's in the room right now. But I think that we should wait and let you contact your House Rangers. But when we come back, my expectation is that should be able to be accomplished.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We gave the Iron Range delegation in the House the three amendments that we are aware of that you had. Are there more from the Senate? Just want to know, because
Madam
I'd
Chair,
like them to know about all of them.
Madam Chair, you know, I think what we should do is we'll limit them to three, and they can pick the three. No, I don't know of any more. I think it's three. Yeah. And we do need to do a little more work before we can finish up on the spreadsheet. So, you know, it's not like we don't have work to do today. But some of that you need to go with your staff, and I need to go with mine and our conferees and work out. So maybe the best thing is for us to recess till after lunch sometime. And do you have a preference on a time? Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I have a CAP board meeting that has a very important vote in it that I'll have to be at this afternoon.
What time is that, Senator?
That's what I was just looking. So
we're getting the information. Two? Maybe we should come back at noon.
I can do it.
And then we'll meet for a little while and see if we can make some progress, and then try to recess at 2 and then see how things work out. Is that okay with the members? We don't either. It's just whatever. Okay.
Sounds like 3 blocks over here.
And it's in the admin
building. Okay. Conference committee is in recess till noon. Conference committee to order. We are going to adjourn for the night. Madam Chair will call us in at the call of the chair. Committee is adjourned.